Hi, I'm Joe Feeks, editor of Pig Health Today, and with me is Dr. Larry Roof. He is with Swine Veterinary Services in Greensburg, Indiana. Welcome, Larry.
Thanks, Joe. Nice to be here.
Excellent to have you here. And, you know, we're going to be talking about immunocastration, which is probably not a big surprise, but I want to pick your brain for two reasons. Number one, you probably have more experience with it than anybody in the country. But number two, speaking frankly, you're one of the few that's really willing to talk about your experiences.
Well, I think we started working with the immunocastration about a little over 4 years ago. And so we've run something like 13 groups of pigs through our facility. So we've gotten to see the product work over a long period of time. And so that's been really interesting to look at it.
In your mind, what has been the biggest benefit in the herds that you've raised in this fashion?
I think people need to understand that immunocastration, I've used this term many times, but let's boars be boars. And the reality is we sometimes forget that boar performance is so much better from a feed conversion and growth rate than when we castrate pigs and make them into barrows. I think as an industry, we just have almost forgot that boars just perform better. And so when we use this product, we just get performance levels that most people are unaccustomed to.
Now, I realize that people don't like change. When I look at the pork industry worldwide, immunocastration has certainly caught on in Asia, the South Pacific, Europe, Latin America, but it seems to be stuck in the mud here. Why is that?
Well, I think in the United States, there's probably a whole lot of factors that come into play, but we've become very concerned about our food in this country. You know, we have the safest food anywhere in the world, and yet some of the general public questions some of the things that happen in the world of food. And I speak specifically of technology. I think most people particularly understand GMOs, all the talk around GMOs. And I think that has led people to look at every technology involved in food and say, oh, that must be bad. When we all know that technology is why we look the way we do in the world today, technology has been a wonderful thing. And it's been occurring in our food industry forever. But there's no doubt that there's been some pushback because it's a new technology.
And so we have this pushback, and I know that, as I said, people don't always like change. But when you look at the experiences that you have had in terms of increased efficiency, growth rate, what's it going to take to move the needle in the U.S.?
Well, ultimately, we have three groups of, technically I'd say four groups of people. We have the consumer on one end, we have the farmer on the other end, and in between we have retailers and packers. And retailers and packers have been one of the groups that have listened to consumers say, we're not sure about this technology. And I think with a lot of things in this world, the status quo wins sometimes, even though there's a really good alternative.
And they're not keen on it because they think it's playing with Mother Nature or some hormonal thing. I mean, can you speak to that a bit?
Yeah, I think there's no doubt they don't hear immunocastration, they think hormones, they think something that would make the pork unsafe. I think all these ideas that unfortunately are confusing in a lot of areas in our food today.
Yeah, and it's not hormones. I mean,
no,
how does it what actually happens to these animals when they're injected?
Yeah, so what happens is the process that makes the two products, androstenone and skatols, that are the compounds that the body produces naturally when the male's intact, those are what give the pig the term taint. So that's why we've castrated pigs forever, is so that those intact males can't produce that product. All immunocastration does is it blocks the physiologic process that allows those products to be made. So it just has the body shut that process off naturally, just like your immune system reacts when we vaccinate for, you know, in the pig industry, something like mycoplasma or something like circovirus. We're just using the body's natural immune system to turn things off.
So tell me a little bit more about your recent experiences raising intact boars. What kind of numbers have you seen specifically?
So, you know, I'll kind of summarize a little bit. It's been, like I said, we've We've closed 13 groups of pigs out that we bring in from weaning to market. And these pigs are not cherry picked or hand picked. These are a normal flow of pigs out of a client of mine's system. We take all of the pigs from 2 weeks weanings, all the male pigs, and they don't castrate pigs that week or those 2 weeks. And then we bring the pigs in and we put them through our nursery and then through our finisher. Probably the most interesting things have been that in approximately the first five groups, we were feeding these pigs based on some old nutritional guidelines. You have to remember, we haven't had a lot of boar research data for diets of pigs like we do with barrows and gilts. And we got really pretty amazing results. I'll give you an example. Feed conversion is so important in our industry. And these same genetics, we would expect castrated males to have a feed conversion of maybe around 2.55 at the best. And our first groups, the feed conversions were 2.3. Wow. That's a big difference in an industry where we talk about changing the feed conversion by 0.05 to have 0.2. That was really dramatic.
That's huge.
And so we saw that across the board, first five groups. And then we were able to get newer diet recommendations that based on some research that had been done, that basically increased the lysine levels a little bit and a little bit of the calcium phosphorus in these pigs. So we closed the first group out on that and it was 2.15. So we saw another dramatic improvement and we've just seen that consistently. You know, I tell people that when you have a closeout on pigs like this that have a feed conversion of 2.12, and these pigs are weighing 300 pounds when we sell them, so we sell very heavy. Those are almost liar's numbers, Joe. Mm-hmm. You know, those are numbers that you hear in a presentation and you go, oh, come on, you know, that doesn't happen, you know. But we've just seen it group after group after group.
And what are you seeing in terms of carcass quality?
The only thing we see in carcass quality is these pigs are extremely lean because they're not laying on the level of fat that they would if they were physically castrated males. So the carcass quality has been very good.
Okay, but in this day and age where pork belly is so important, I mean, are you seeing anything in terms of any differences in fat deposition?
We've not had any complaints from our the packer that we send those pigs to. There have been no complaints over this 4.5 years. So we just don't see any differences carcass-wise that are an issue. I think one needs to remember that with immunocastration, when you give the second dose to the pig, which is approximately 3 weeks before they're marketed, that pig now becomes a barrow again. And so that pig starts laying down more fat every day after that. And so we're actually taking a pig that's extremely lean at that point in time, and we're actually putting a little fat back onto that pig. And so that probably alleviates any concern with the carcasses being too lean or that kind of thing.
What have you learned about feeding intact boars? Do they have any special nutritional requirements?
Yeah, again, other than what the newer research is starting to show, lysine levels are important because we know that that is important when the pig's leaner and laying on more muscle. And also a little bit of work being done with calcium phosphorus because of the skeletons of these pigs, the fact that they're intact, growing fast. We want to make sure that their skeletons are good. So those are the main areas that the nutritionists are really working on.
Now, in Europe, where they are moving away from castration, but they're saying, well, if you don't use an immunocastration product, you can either raise the pigs to a certain weight where boar taint is not going to be a problem, which I guess could be a little dicey. But then they say you can also use an anesthetic. Mm-hmm. When castrating. Is that practical here in the U.S.?
Yeah, so first of all, I think any of us, any veterinarians would tell you that using local anesthetics in pigs to castrate is truly impractical. That's just not a methodology.
Why is that?
Well, first of all, it's difficult to make that effective where it's not only pain-free at the moment of castration, but that local anesthetic's going to wear off in 6 to 12 hours. And that pig's going to still feel the pain from castration. So it's a little bit of a, I think it's a little bit misleading to think that that just makes that all go away. Products like meloxicam have been tried. The reality is the same experience. I just attended a welfare meeting last November. Mm-hmm. And I think the good news, when I say the good news, is that a lot of the researchers with those products acknowledge that those are not panaceas to eliminating pain from pigs in castration. Again, not just at the time of castration, but for the 2 or 3, 4 days while those scars or those incisions are healing. So I think almost, like a lot of things in this world, I think most people would have said, well, we know that, anybody that's used, but it kind of had to go through its normal, well, let's test it, let's try it, see what happens, you know.
So what's the next step on your farm?
Well, I think the next step, we use our farm to give people an opportunity to come see the pigs. You know, I think almost everybody is like I was the first group I sent through. We wonder about the behavior of having 25 boars in a pen. Will they fight? Will they kill each other? Well, it's interesting. The answer to that's no, they don't. What happens is the pigs have their normal social pecking order, just like they do if they're barrows or they're gilts. And so they go through that when you first mix the pigs together. But in our case, we're mixing them when they're, you know, at weaning time. So it's really no different fighting that we see post-weaning of any pig. And then because the social orders are all normal, there's no fighting that occurs. Now, from a behavioral standpoint, what we see is once those pigs start to reach puberty at, say, 4 months of age, we start to see mating behavior. We see vocalization. We see mounting other males. We see the thrusting of the penis, you know, like they're trying to mount. But what's interesting about all that, we don't see that as a problem. I mean, we don't see a higher death loss because of that. We don't see a higher injury rate. We see all those behaviors, but we don't see fighting because the socialization has occurred, and that part's okay. And the normal boar behaviors just don't appear to cause any problems within the pen.
So lastly, if a veterinarian or producer wanted to give this a try, you know, just based on some of the numbers that you've mentioned today, what advice would you have for them?
Well, my main advice is that you're going to be like anybody. You're going to be very interested in those first pigs through because you've never done that. And number two, you're going to be surprised that other than the things I just described, you're not going to see anything really unusual, and the pig performance is going to be very replicable. I think it's really important, Joe, to just remind people that immunocastration is not the reason the performance is so good. Immunocastration solves the pain mitigation issues around castration. It solves the infection issues around physical castration. But what it's allowing the pig to do is to just be a boar. And that pig just performs better than if he had been physically castrated.
So in short, as you said before, let boars be boars.
Let boars be boars.
Okay. We have been talking to Dr. Larry Roof. He is a veterinarian at Swine Veterinary Services in Greensburg, Indiana. Larry, again, thank you for sharing your experiences.
Thank you.